Good morning to most, good afternoon to others, and good evening to the viewing audience across the pond. I'm your co-host, Pascal Robert, here for another episode of This is Revolution. If you're new to the channel, thank you so much for joining us on this lovely Saturday afternoon. If you're a returning subscriber, welcome back. So glad to have you all to be here with us. A friendly reminder that if you haven't done so already, make sure you have June 8th reserved on your calendar for our TRR live show in DC. Check out the show flyer. Wherever you are watching or listening to this show, there are links to the description to get tickets. Remember that if you make it to DC, then that's fine. You can still get tickets to the stream of the show. I'd like to bring in my co-host, the woman who is the voice of reason for This is Revolution, MC Toussaint.
No applause, but there you go. Here's a little. Hello, hello.
There you go. Yeah. MC Toussaint, comment ça va? How are you?
Ça va bien.
Very good, very good. Are you looking forward to our show today?
I am. It's going to be good.
It's going to be a good show. It's going to be a good show. The uncommitted movement. Since the October 7th Hamas attacks, Israel has responded with a devastating bombing campaign that has cost the lives of over 30,000 Palestinians, mostly civilians in that population, many women and children. Unlike in years past, during this year's long occupational conflict, the global community is recognizing Israel as not the innocent nation defending itself from a terrorist threat, but the aggressor coming to war crimes and genocide. Hundreds of thousands of Americans in cities across the country have protested the U.S. support of Israel in their bloody campaign, and still the money pours in to continue to arm Israel's war crime machine. But there's a new strategy in the work that might put fear into Joe Biden and the Democratic Party, and that is voting uncommitted in the primaries. Will this strategy be enough to force Biden to call for a full ceasefire, or is it too little too late? Today we have Vote Uncommitted New Jersey to come in to tell us about the strategy. They are organizing and they hope to accomplish what the strategy and what they're trying to get done. Welcome to our two guests, Lectra and Bill from New Jersey. Hello, how are you?
Hi there. Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for having us, Pascal.
No problem. Toussaint, you want to ask the first question or you want me to continue?
I'll ask the first question.
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. We truly appreciate it. Now tell the audience, what is the uncommitted movement exactly?
Brett, would you like to?
Sure. So, thank you so much, Electra, and thank you, MC Toussaint. So, after we saw the amazing effort that was put forward by organizers in Michigan with the Listen to Michigan campaign, and then repeated in so many of the other states with early primaries, we've all in New Jersey, we came together pretty quickly in order to express our disapproval and our protest against the actions that the administration is aiding in Palestine and Gaza at the moment. So the gist of it is, although different states around the country have different options for what you can vote for, some have uncommitted, some have no preference, all these different things. We want to get an option like that in states across the country so that everyone can do it. Here in New Jersey, we don't have an uncommitted option by default. So we actually had to petition for and apply for slates of delegates, uncommitted delegates, that we could then collect signatures for to get on the ballot. And so where it currently stands is we are on the ballot in, I believe, 18 of the 20 primary districts in New Jersey. So when you go there on June 4th to choose, if you're a New Jersey resident, you'll see Joe Biden. There's another woman running. She doesn't have any delegates. Her name escapes me at the moment. And then you'll see us, uncommitted, with the slogan, Justice for Palestine, Permanent Ceasefire Now. So that's kind of the gist of it. Electric, want to add anything?
That pretty much covers this, the strategy and what we all need to be doing right now. As to why this is important, what I would like to highlight is that this is not business as usual. The scale of it and the threats, the situation in Gaza is unprecedented. And what that means for Palestine, first and foremost, but also for the US and the rest of the world, I'm not sure is well understood by most people. So this is not an election we can afford to just, you know, do nothing because we are disgusted with politics. And even if all we have to offer right now is a very loud statement as to what we think the Democratic Party should mean in order to save it from itself, it is certainly better than nothing.
Can you guys, both of you, particularly Electric, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got motivated so passionately to be behind not only about American politics overall, but particularly this issue in Palestine in general?
Absolutely. Thank you. So to connect my own story to the uncommitted, first again, let me highlight that this is a movement driven mainly by the youth. And unfortunately, I don't belong with that group anymore directly. So this is why it's great we have Brad here as well, because it's their generation. They have been the soul of this whole thing. On my end, as a first-generation migrant to the U.S., right, we were talking about that before. I came to the U.S. about 15 years ago. I'm a professor of Middle East Studies. I teach at NGIT in Rutgers, at New York, here in New Jersey. And I come from the broader region. I specialize in these things. I spent my life studying genocide, past atrocities, ethno-religious conflict, focusing specifically on Greece and Turkey, but also the broader region. So in so many ways, this is very close to my own identity, where I come from, my own world, my own expertise, and also my dual identity as an American as well, given that I now live and work here. I teach American students. I have two kids of my own. And I am just overwhelmed with the state of affairs. The atrocities we not only tolerate, but somehow try to justify, which I think makes Palestine such a powerful symbol. It's not the only crime that is happening in the world right now. Hardly the only atrocity that is shocking in human history or in recent history, although it could be argued that as of recently we have broken every record. But we are not trying to compare atrocities here, like which genocide is the worst, right? It's just that where the US stands in all this, the fact that we try somehow to justify this, fully support it, enable it, provide the money, the weapons, the political support against the whole international community at this point that makes this possible is just outrageous. It's offensive to every American who voted specifically for Joe Biden. This is not what we voted for. It makes absolutely no reason, legally, politically, from the perspective of human rights, history, any way you want to approach it, it doesn't even make any sense from the perspective of American interests, if we are to focus on a very selfish, right, understanding of the world. It doesn't make any sense, period. The cruelty, the brutality, the danger of it all. And I saw, I was reading the comments here, and some of them are great, right? Somebody said, we are lucky that Iran is showing restraint for now. And I was just reading the news as to how Iran seized just a few minutes ago, an Israeli-linked ship. So aside from the genocide that is currently unfolding in Gaza, and quite frankly, it is ridiculous to try and argue that this is not a genocide in any way and in any legal and formal definition of the term. It is just simply ridiculous. So other than the genocide that is taking place in Gaza right now and the violence in the West Bank, we are on the brink of a broader escalation, and every single expert in the world has been saying that for quite some time now. So what are we doing exactly is the question we would like to ask Joe Biden. Like, is he committed ideologically to genocide to such an extent that he's willing to risk starting World War III? It's just nonsensical. So on my end, I was lucky enough to become involved with this movement because it gives us an opportunity to do something rather than just vent, you know.
Excellent. Brad, do you have, you want to talk about your background and how you got involved?
Sure. So just briefly on me and my background. So I'm a teacher, I'm a music educator and a musician. I have been a socialist for a while now. I'm only about to turn 25 next month. So I kind of got really into the movement around Bernie's two campaigns, specifically 2020, because I was finally old enough to vote. And then I think from then on, I just kept educating myself. You know, I'm a big fan of programs like this. I've listened to, you know, our friends over at Left Reckoning, Matt Leck, David Griscom, The Michael Brooks Show, all those things. So I was consuming a lot of political media, wasn't involved for a long time. And I said, I really need to actually do something. I need to join DSA. And I think in December, after the wake of, like Electra said, the horrific atrocities we were seeing in Gaza, I said, okay, I've got to do something. I'm finally jumping in. And so I've gotten involved. And then since then, after the Michigan primary, I forget the exact date, but it was when NJ Uncommitted started to come together and we all were doing all that. So, you know, from my background, it's really just been, you know, learning about it from, you know, kind of the educational side, but then also from, you know, I have students who are from different backgrounds who have families in Israel. I have students who are Palestinians. And so, you know, hearing from them and, you know, learning more, and that, you know, after I think a while of, you know, just sitting and consuming, I felt like, okay, I finally need to get involved. And I think it's important for everyone to do that now. I think a lot of people are sometimes hesitant to, they say, oh, I don't know how much I can contribute. I'm busy, I'm working, you know, and the reality is we all are, but I think if I could just, you know, turn my personal story into a call to action, we have got to do something now. I share a lot of people, I'm seeing a lot of stuff in the chat, the frustration, the worry that, you know, it may not get better, but we have to try. There's really no other option. We have to send a very clear message to Joe Biden and the administration that what he is doing is unacceptable, and that we're not going to have it. As American citizens, we don't want our country supporting a genocide.
I appreciate the strength in both of your tones and your feelings. So let's get back to the question. What are some of the main criticisms you guys are facing? A lot of Democrats that believe this movement is a gateway to a return to Trump, and how do you counter that narrative?
Electra, you want to go ahead? Or?
I will start with something Hannah Arendt said at some point, and it's a cliche, but cliches exist for a reason. That having to choose between two evils, right? When people argue that we should choose the lesser evil, they tend to forget that this is evil nonetheless. So we find ourselves in dire straits politically. I mean, clearly the Trump administration was a disaster, the presidency, and it could be an even bigger disaster second time around. So that goes without saying that none of us would like to see Donald Trump becoming the president. At the same time, is this really a political argument? Is this a platform that the American people, the global superpower, the biggest army in the world that is involved in every foreign issue right now across the globe, that has certain responsibilities towards their own civilians as well and citizens. So is this really the platform we are presented with? Vote for us, because if not, Trump. I find it deeply offensive, truly, to their voters, to the country itself, to everybody. This is not a political platform. This is not an option that we can do anything, because the opposition right now is significantly worse. This is not how I personally understand democracy. So how did we end up here is a question we could all ask ourselves. But to my friends in the Democratic Party, what I keep saying, like throughout this crisis that pushed so many of us over the limit, is that if we continue like that, without negotiating anything, observing, understanding, knowing very well the violations of our mandate, our rights, on the end of our government, a government we voted for, then what's exactly the so-called democracy we're trying to save from Donald Trump? What does it mean? To me, it becomes nothing but an expression of elitism, because we feel, and that's naive and false if you ask me, we feel that this is happening to somebody else, right? That we are privileged enough to focus on what concerns us. It doesn't work that way. First of all, because there are many overlapping issues between the issues that trouble Americans, and we can have this discussion as well, and how our government operates abroad. And it comes down to whether they value all of us or not. Aside from the low political games, all that pause, well, thereby let's focus on reproductive rights and all that, they have a responsibility towards the people who got them elected, who truly believe in human rights within this country and abroad, who would like to maintain some very basic levels of sanity and decency, simple human decency. So if the Democratic Party becomes, without us even giving a fight to save it from itself, something that is not significantly different than the Republican Party, is it really worth focusing exclusively on stopping Donald Trump? Whether this is going to happen or not is for Joe Biden and his group of advisors to think about, right? Because the American people have been very clear, and we want to show them that in New Jersey, the Democratic voters are very clear as well. Those of us who vote for the Democratic Party, who have been campaigning for the Democratic Party along the lines of what the Democratic Party is supposed to stand for, want to give them a very clear message. We won't vote for you if all you have to offer, on my end at least, nobody has to commit to anything with the uncommitted, but many of us won't vote for you if all you have to offer is that Trump is terrible. This is offensive, quite frankly. While committing a genocide, while destroying American interests abroad, while showing a complete disregard for the 30, 40,000 civilians that have been massacred, most of whom are women and children, in ways that violate any notion, not only of international law, but also of very basic humanity. It is the first genocide in human history that is fully covered in real time, broadcasted in social media. And they have the audacity to stand right in front of the nation and make statements such as, this is good for American manufacturing. That was Joe Biden, right? I mean, we have to send more arms to Israel, despite the fact that it is inhumane and illegal. It breaks, it violates American laws, international laws, any type of legality you want to employ in order to address this issue. So it's good for American manufacturing. We are going to build more weapons and ship them to Israel, because who cares what's happening over there, right? It's just Palestinians that are getting slaughtered right in front of our own eyes. So what kind of a statement is that? What kind of a party is that? And then we have, as of recently, the usual suspects informing us that they haven't noticed anything happening in Gaza and the West Bank that would qualify for a war crime. I mean, they haven't noticed, the whole world has noticed, the things that are happening at a UN level right now, with Nicaragua taking Germany to the International Court of Justice for complicity in genocide, and we will be the next ones to follow, right? I mean, the facts are the facts. And yet they're addressing the American people, their own voters who got them elected, without even showing us the most basic respect, that they care about our feelings. We are not okay with our name, our money, our votes becoming identified with what's fast becoming one of the worst genocidal incidents in recent history, and the type of hot conflict that could trigger a broader confrontation with disastrous implications for everybody. So to me, the whole discussion at this point is ridiculous. If we do not address the responsibilities of the people whom we are getting elected, then what's the point of any of this?
Brad, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Electra.
Yeah. No, that's about it. At end of my rant for now.
Brad, yeah. You want to jump in?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, echoing a lot of what Electra said, I think, like you said, a lot of the criticism has been kind of along the lines you were saying, people are scared of what's going to happen in November. And so our movement is just about, we need to send the strongest possible message and the strongest possible words in June to Biden to get him to change course. And, you know, like Electra said, what is... We have to preserve democracy. And what is the point of the Democratic Party talking about democracy if then, you know, they're going to turn around and basically just, you know, almost capitulate to some of the framings or the positions of the Republican Party on immigration? We see it, you know, the Democratic Party says, Biden says, oh, Trump needs to come work with me on a border policy, or, you know, especially in the case of what's going on in Gaza right now, it's the case between would I rather someone in Trump who's horrible and is going to do all the bad things he says, or someone in Biden who is going to continue to arm Israel and do those bad things, but he'll go out occasionally and say that he's really, really upset by what's going on, and he promises he's really, really mad at Netanyahu. And so I think we've encountered some of that opposition, but what I've been heartened by in getting out and doing canvassings to get these signatures at mosques and masjids across the state during Eid is that people aren't stupid. They get it. They understand the threat that is both posed by a Trump presidency, but they also understand the threat that is posed if we don't stand up right now in this primary to give Biden a very clear message that we're not going to stand for what the administration is currently doing to aid the Israelis in committing genocide.
Toussaint, do you have any follow-up question?
Let me see. I don't. I'm sorry.
Okay, another problem. So according to the recent NPR article, the uncommitted movement is gaining momentum, but Biden is still gaining majority of the primary votes. Do you think the noise your guys are making is enough?
we do need to make more noise, and we're trying to do so. And again, like, obviously he's running unopposed, right? The whole, again, when we are having these discussions, oh, like Biden is leading against whom? Like the zero opposition? Obviously he's leading, and obviously nobody was prepared to actually challenge him when all of this started. And quite frankly, if I am to offer some self-criticism here, we've all gotten a little bit lazy. On my end as well, I did not want to vote for Biden last time around, but I did so because Trump. And we have become conditioned really in voting along these lines that I don't like him on so many levels and for so many reasons, but the alternative is way worse. So I'll just go out there and vote, and that's it, right? I have fulfilled my political responsibilities. And clearly it doesn't work that way. And now we have reached the point that I feel very strongly we need to wake up. And to echo what Brad said, it's not only about Palestine. This is the center of our attention. This is our priority. What's happening in Gaza? I said it before, and I will continue to say this and highlight it in the strongest terms, in the strongest possible terms, to fight against the collective gaslighting we're all exposed to. What's happening right now in Gaza, the historical context is also important, but what's happening right now is just unprecedented in so many ways. And this is not something that Iran is doing or Russia is doing, right? It's not Russia committing war crimes in Ukraine. It's America. This is directly connected to America. That's the other thing we hear very often among people, that it's terrible what's happening over there, but what can you do? I mean, quite frankly, I want to address my fellow Democrats here and say that this is ignorant and offensive as hell. I mean, if you want to pretend that we are the party that studies democracy and respects democracy, then you do not have the right to say ignorant things that are offensive and racist. It is not something that is happening. It's something that we are actively doing. And 30,000 slaughtered civilians in 6 months. Every single record in terms of murdering journalists, pregnant women, medical doctors, UN staffers has been broken by far. More children have died in Gaza, have been killed in Gaza in the past 6 months than collectively in the rest of the world in the past 4 or 5 years, including Ukraine and the many other disastrous war zones that we can take into account, right? So just the scale of it all and the level of America, the scale of American complicity, I really don't think is understood by all of us. So I feel very strongly about this, that we cannot sit down and have a conversation about how we stand on the end of human rights, right? That we want to fight against racism, we want to fight against all kinds of discrimination internally, as we should. We cannot do that by financing a genocide for reasons that are incomprehensible to me at this point, quite frankly, and completely disregard the fact that 15,000 women and children have been slaughtered, that 2.3 million people have been displaced in violation of every notion of humanity and international law. What's happening in Gaza happened during World War I, when the Ottomans would march the Armenians from the north to the south, and we refer to that brutality as the Armenian genocide that shocked the world and became the point of reference, right, for international law and coining the very term genocide later on. And that was more than a century ago. So We are seriously arguing here in the year 2024 as democratic voters, allegedly people who do care about human rights, that 30,000 people, again, I will keep repeating these numbers, getting slaughtered, 2 million people, more than 2 million people being starved right now as we speak. And the broader escalation of every notion of atrocity that is directly because of our involvement and support. If we wanted to have stopped this, we could have done this from the first day, from day one. So we're having a conversation again as allegedly people who care about these things, that this is just something that is happening over there. We have very little to do with it. And well, what can you do? Disasters happen. We can't fix everything in this world. I think people should be ashamed of themselves if this is how they're thinking about it. Because if we are to go around and try to shame Trump voters, which is a tactic I have a problem with in general, because criminal as the Trump administration might have been, people are frustrated and people make all kinds of choices for all kinds of reasons, right? So just passing blame and putting people down and trying to make them feel that they're ignorant and stupid because of their political choices is a problematic approach in general. But if this is how we want to go about this campaign, then it's the Democrats who should be ashamed of themselves, because their support for Biden right now is ignorant and racist as hell. So that's, again, how I see the whole situation. And it may sound too extreme, but these are extreme circumstances. I guess this is the message I would like to convey, given that despite the fact that, you know, it's happening right in front of us, it's fully covered by social media, the whole world is mobilizing to stop this. Even corrupt systemic institutions that have no power, such as the United Nations, right? Nobody places their faith on the United Nations. They're known for doing absolutely nothing in most cases. And yet, even at that level right now, every single bureaucrat and diplomat in the world is trying to do something. Because we are all in dire straits. And this is such an overt, such an offensive, such a thuggish, really, violation of international law and humanity, what's happening in Gaza again, that if that happens and we don't stop it, then who's going to stop every other country, nation, group, totalitarian leader, and all of the aforementioned together from doing whatever they want? Nothing makes sense anymore. Nothing applies. We can just raid embassies, right? Arrest people. We see this broader culmination of violence across the board. Because if international law and international order, and quite frankly, the shreds of American credibility collapse, and I'm not saying this from a perspective of a naive faith in the international system. I mean, clearly there are many problems with the international system and American imperialism that has been the defining power that has shaped the international system in recent decades, ever since World War II, arguably. Regardless, if any sense of stability, legality, and credibility or faith to the international system collapses, if the message we're giving the world is that anything goes, if you have the power, the money, and the weapons, or just the will to do whatever, commit all kinds of crimes, and there is no accountability whatsoever, I think we can all appreciate that that makes for a very bleak future for all of us.
How do you deal with the counter argument that if Trump is going to continue with the genocide under terms under which we will have no pressure on him as Democrats, liberals, or leftists, why should we enable a possibility that he becomes president when even if Biden is enabling a genocide, at least we have an audience with him that requires that he be responsive to our demands?
That's an excellent question on my end, and I think Brad would like to respond to that as well. Well, on my end, this is a hypothetical. What if Trump? Well, Trump wasn't in charge when all of this happened. And quite frankly, if this continues like this until November, there will be no Palestine to speak of. It's just, I don't know if there will be any type of peace in the broader region to speak of. So we have really, really worrisome developments taking place every single day. There is great concern among very serious people. And this is why the tone has changed on an international level, not because suddenly, right, people in the West and Europe started caring about Palestine. I mean, people do care. I mean, I'm referring to the governments that allegedly represent us. So this is a very worrisome situation. So it's now April. If this continues like this without us doing anything to stop it until November, what Trump will do or won't do is besides the point, really. There will be nothing left. 2.5 million people are starved. If this doesn't stop now, that should have been stopped yesterday. 2.5 million people are threatened with famine. I mean, famine is there. Every single authority in the world is telling us that. It's not looming over Gaza. It's in Gaza. Children are dying not only because they're bombed, not only because they're executed by Israeli soldiers, but also because they're starved to death. And that's us. We are doing this. Children are starved to death. They're exposed to all kinds of viruses and disease. There's no medical there's no healthcare whatsoever, clearly, despite the truly heroic efforts. I can't even imagine what it means to be a doctor right now in that situation. These people are really true heroes. So despite the heroic efforts of the volunteers on the ground, there is nobody has actual access to healthcare right now in Gaza. So if this continues like that, until November, we are watching the extermination, the deliberate, systematic, brutal extermination of 2.5 million people in Gaza and the culmination of violence in the West Bank and Israel proper against Palestinians and Arab Israeli citizens. So 7 million people are the target of Israel's Netanyahu, who at this point is too deep in to stop. The man in every way tells us that he's going to push more and more and more until he drags us into a broader regional confrontation, and he won't stop until somebody stops him. So what Trump might do after November at this point sounds like a nonsensical question, really. It is the Biden administration that is in charge. We voted for him, and this is not what we voted for. There will be Palestine to speak of, honestly.
Brad, do you want to jump in here?
Sure, yeah. So I think, you know, I obviously, like I said, you know, a lot of the voters get it. They understand the urgency and the need that, you know, Trump is unequivocally bad on Palestine and on these issues, and he would be worse. But again, like Electra said, it's a case of urgency. All these things are happening right now, and if this continues, I'm not sure what will be left in November or December. And to the point you made about, you know, we have leverage over Biden because he sees us maybe as at least a minor part of the coalition. And so the point I would kind of refute and push back on then is like, okay, but is it even worth being in that coalition if he's so invested in supporting the genocide that the Israelis are committing that he's completely ignoring the will of a large part of his base? I mean, uncommitted obviously is widespread, but also there's tons of polling out now showing majority of Democrats think what Israel is doing in Gaza is genocide. Only something like 17% of Democrats say it's not. So if he's willing to ignore that much of his base, what is even the point of voting him to enact our policies if, like Electra said, we voted for him and now, or at least some of us did, and then he's not going to do anything to try to enact those policies? And to go back on, I think Electra did a really great point in explaining why it is that we have to stand up now. And as to your earlier question of if it's enough, I think on a national scale, it is. There's comments that you can find from officials in the IDF. I forget the rank of the individual who said it, but someone high up, maybe a major general. And he said that basically all their ammunition for what they're doing comes from us. If we turn off the spigot, they stop. They have to stop. They don't have the industrial capacity to make that at themselves. So we have the tools. I mean, and this has been proven, even presidents who have horrendous records on foreign policy, who we would disagree with, Reagan, Bush Sr., have in the past used the leverage that we have via aid, via weapons shipments, to tell them that what they're doing is beyond the pale and has gone too far. And as to whether it's enough on the state level, I think just like we talked about this a little bit before we were on air, but I think a lot of people don't realize New Jersey's home to over 300,000 Muslims. It's, in terms of Muslim population in raw numbers, we are top five. I think we're fifth in the country. In terms of percentage of the population, we're third in the country. And so between all of those people, and between all Muslim and Palestinian activists and everyone who we are in coalition with, Jewish Voice of Peace, and all these other groups, young people across campuses, like Electra was saying, we do have a serious movement that I think the state will need to contend with. And we actually send, I think it's 126 pledged delegates to the convention in the summer. So that's more than Michigan. It's more than Minnesota. So we are in a position, unfortunately, our primary is June 4th, so it's late in the cycle. And at this point, people can obviously see Joe Biden has secured the nomination. But I think New Jersey is in a really unique position to help carry forward that momentum and continue what all the organizers in Michigan, in Minnesota, in Wisconsin, in all these other states have started, because of just the internal structure and the way that the Democratic primary is set up.
We have a super chat question, so I'm just going to put that on the screen and I will read this out for you guys. This is from Dizzle McFizzle. Is that not the point? It seems to me that Capitol wants to show everyone how powerless we are in the face of genocide. It feels like a gross and naked display of power. Am I wrong? What can we do?
I could answer that. I couldn't agree more. And this is precisely what I was trying to convey as well when I was saying that this is like really offensive. It is deliberate manipulation. It's deliberate gaslighting. They're giving us the deliberate message that not only Palestinians don't matter, but we don't matter either. How we feel, what we have to say. I couldn't agree more. It's very well said. It's a very overt statement, show of force, that we got you because Trump, right? As to what we can do, the only thing we can do is to fight back. honestly. And it's never easy to go against the wave. But quite frankly, we are not even going against the wave at this point. The overwhelming majority of American people, misinformed as we may be, misguided as we may be collectively, we all have our biases, we all have our selfish little interests and lives and priorities. There's nothing wrong with that. We're all human. At the same time, precisely because we are all human, most people are not okay with this when they understand what's happening. And this attempt to completely gaslight a whole nation, really, including but not limited their own voters, is a deliberate tactic. I fully agree with you. Whoever tries to say something against the DNC's strategy and Joe Biden as their nominee of choice is either a Trump supporter or a Russian spy. It would be ridiculous, really, but we really hear these statements. Whoever criticizes the Democratic Party right now for enabling a freaking genocide is a Russian spy, a Trump supporter, an Iranian spy, maybe. I haven't heard that yet, but I wouldn't be surprised. And you hear people like Nancy Pelosi before she saw the light, if I may argue, perhaps because of the uncommitted movement. And by that, I mean that she's one of the many who started changing their views as of recently. But up until recently, she was arguing that, again, it's all about Russia. The Trump election was about Russia. Any type of criticism is Russia. It has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that the Democratic Party is failing, betraying, and completely disregarding its own voters, among other things. So I do agree with the comment. It's excellent. It's put very well. It is a deliberate tactic to intimidate us. And the only thing that we can do is to realize that at the end of the day, we have more power than we appreciate. We are the voters, right? And considering how many people do not vote in any election, imagine what could happen if all of us who are not engaged or are not engaged enough because we are so disappointed with the political system as a whole, realize that that poses on some level an existential threat to our democracy, regardless of whether Trump is going to win or not. Imagine what could happen if active voters and, most important, non-active voters decided to participate and to give a statement and to say, no, we say no to this and we say no by the millions. And good luck winning an election and protecting your little privileges that clearly is all you care about without millions of us voting for you. So there is power in that. And most people would be on the right side of history if given the opportunity to appreciate that we are not alone. And the people who criticize these atrocities are not crazy, radical extremists. The youth is leading as they should, because that's what the youth should do. It's their future more than anybody else's. But the rest of us as well, from all walks of life, really, and with all kinds of backgrounds, we need to give them the message that this is not okay with your own voters. You have the power to manipulate us and to gaslight us, and we do have the power to vote you out if we call this still a democracy. And we'll take time and work on everybody's end. But if we realize how important that is, then we do have the power to do something about it.
Right.
Your question.
Thank you so much.
We have another super chat saying thank you from Dizzle McFizzle. Thank you for your thoughtful response. I'm feeling energized now. Hell yeah.
Yeah, and if I could just add on real quick, I think Dizzle, that's a great, it's a great question, and it's, it, you know, I still am astonished every day waking up this far into the conflict every day and seeing how much organized power stands in the way of just recognizing basic Palestinian dignity. And so if I could, you know, maybe motivate some people here with this, I think one thing that I've taken away in a couple conversations with older comrades who have been living for a long time and remember, you know, some of our policy vis-a-vis Israel going as far back as the Cold War. And one thing they've said to me is the policy regard and both the policy from the administration, but also public opinion have shifted more in the past 5 months than they have in the previous 60 years before that. It's obviously still not enough. We still have work to do. We're, you know, we need to keep pushing, but it, you know, think about that, that if it's, if we've shown so far that we can move it just by, you know, the, this wave of what uncommitted and activism and marches and solidarity all around the country, you know, there is plenty of room to grow. It reminds me, one of my favorite quotes by Gramsci about, you know, the paraphrasing, pessimism of the intellect, optimism of the will. We have to be realistic about the challenges that are in front of us, and it's not going to be easy, but also optimistic in that we've done a lot so far. And yes, it's just starting to move the needle, but that's all the more reason to keep pushing.
So when you vote in the primaries, you get delegates. Can you tell us about uncommitted New Jersey delegates?
Sure. So this was a wide group of people. The effort was very DSA led. So New Jersey has three DSA chapters, North, Central, and South. Central does exist, I promise. And so all three of them, you know, kind of spearheaded this effort. And then we have people on board from other organizations as well, Jewish Voice for Peace, If Not Now, and just other people who aren't affiliated with any organization who heard about us and wanted to get onboarded and get involved. So basically, it was on a pretty tight timeline. After Michigan happened, we had until, I believe it was March 6th, for the people who wanted to be delegates to apply to be delegates. And so they had to send in paperwork to the state basically saying, I want to apply to be a delegate on this slate, uncommitted. And then our slogan, we had, you know, a whole process to vote for a slogan. It can be six words. Normally in the state, it's just, you know, Middlesex County Democrats or whatever. In this case, it was, we voted on Justice for Palestine, Permanent Ceasefire Now. And so all those delegates were accepted. And then the process after that was that we had to go out and we had to collect in certain districts that are based loosely around our legislative districts, although New Jersey is weird and makes it even more difficult by combining certain ones. We had to collect a certain number of signatures in each district. So in about, I think, a week and a half, 2 weeks, we collected almost 3,500 signatures across the state in support of the delegates. And these delegates are there. These are all working people. These are just regular people, you know, some of whom are involved in DSA, some of whom are not, just who said, you know what, enough's enough. And if I have to put my name on the ballot in order to give people in New Jersey a chance and a voice to be able to speak to their dissatisfaction and their outrage at what our administration is supporting, then so be it. So I'm not personally delegate. I know Electra, I think Electra might be a delegate for her district, but it's, you know, there should be in every district of New Jersey, there's between, I think, one and five people who their names will be on the ballot where in their home county where they vote. And so the hope is, I think the threshold is 15%. If we reach 15% in a district, then that sends at least one delegate to the national convention. And so our goal is just to get as many as possible to really disrupt things and show that New Jersey is not to be taken for granted. yes, we have a reputation as a safe blue state, but you have constituencies here that you need to listen to, at the same as you do in the broader country. Muslims, Palestinians, you know, our fellow anti-Zionist Jews, young people, everyone across the political spectrum. Even, you know, I talk about personally, even people like my parents who used to be registered Republicans and, you know, have kind of since left because of Trump, and they were previously pro-Israel. And even they were willing, they signed the petition and they said, yes, we're going to go out in June and we're going to vote uncommitted because it's going too far. They, you know, Israel cannot be violating this international law and face no repercussions whatsoever.
I have a question.
And if I may add to that, as somebody who is a delegate in, I don't even remember the district, right? It's like South Orange, Maplewood, 15, 1914. So we have ordinary people in every district, right? All of us, we have a connection to politics on some level, but it was just a very spontaneous reaction that we need to be doing something. And people have jobs, have responsibilities, have children, they have studies, I don't want to minimize that, or all kinds of other things that they were already doing with their lives. But we all found some time. We tried to find the time to do this in any capacity that we can, because we feel very strongly about it. And quite frankly, this is the most powerful statement we can make right now to show everybody that if you feel the same way, if you're not okay with your own party murdering children, and I want to say something here, Brad, this is not Israel's genocide. This is our genocide. I mean, clearly Israel is leading the way. I mean, it's a very complex situation, and in that context, Israel took action, and they seem to be dedicated to see this through, right? To they won't stop. At the same time, we provide everything, the weapons, the money, the political support. None of this would have been possible if it weren't for the United States of America, under the leadership of Joe Biden specifically and his whole administration. This is beyond complicity. It's direct guilt. And I'm sure at some point, as a historian, I have no doubt in my mind that at some point the history of this will be written. And there might be a very real legal implications on an international level as well for the Biden administration. So people shouldn't feel hopeless. That's the main danger. When we're convinced that regardless of anything that's happening, regardless of how disturbing it might be, there is nothing we can do because this is the dynamic. That's not true. History is all about constant change, and I'm not naive enough to argue that we're moving towards necessarily a better future, but I would argue that the mobilization of people when they feel themselves in dire straits absolutely does make a difference time and again. So we have power. Go out and vote for the uncommitted. If you're a member of the Democratic Party, if you're not, you can register very easily just to make this very statement. And remember this, that we are not alone in this. People have empathy. People mean well. They may not have the time or the courage, really, to just go against what seems to be the mainstream approach to everything. But there are two problems with this idea. Number one, this is not the mainstream approach to anything anymore. the Joe Biden administration is fully isolated internationally on an international level, in an international context. We are the biggest villain in the world right now. People need to appreciate that. And that's not a hypothetical Trump presidency. This is the very real Joe Biden presidency we voted for, and we campaigned for him to get elected. So we are fully isolated internationally. Internally, the polls are very clear, as Brad said. No, people are not okay with genocide. Can you blame them for that? And the more they understand what's happening, and the more they start appreciating the magnitude of the situation, the more they feel that this is really disturbing. But they shouldn't feel they're powerless. It is the 21st century. It is easy to connect. And as the Uncommitted campaign proves, because the whole thing came to life in less than 2 weeks, it just takes for a small group perhaps to start things, and then many others will follow and join in and take over. And if that happens, again, we have way more power than we appreciate.
All right, well, we come up with an hour. Thank you guys again for checking out this show today. Please hit the like button on your way out. If you're a new viewer, hit the subscribe and notifications button. If you're listening on Apple, hit the subscribe, get access to the Champagne Room. And if you enjoy what you see here, you have the means to feel to it so inclined, become a patron for $3 a month or $30 a year so you can access the Champagne Room past and present. Join us for movie nights and make sure we can continue to bring you shows like this. The show links are in the comment section. Toussaint, do you have anything you want to add?
Just wanted to ask you guys how we can stay in touch with you.
Sure. So we have, we have the website. So if you visit uncommittednj.org, that will take you to the website. From there, anyone who's in New Jersey, you can check out any press that's been written about us. You can contact us if you want to get involved yourself. And you can also see, I saw someone mention in the chat, what will the ballot look like? So we have resources there so you can see what your choices are going to look like on the ballot. We'll be right there along with Joe Biden. It'll be Joe Biden and his delegates. And then there's another woman who I mentioned, I think earlier, her name escapes me. She doesn't have any delegates. And then there'll be us, Uncommitted, Justice for Palestine, Ceasefire Now, with the names of whichever delegates in that district are there, and you'll have the chance to vote for us. So if you want to stay in contact, there's contact forms on the website, there's emails. We're also on pretty much all socials, I believe, Instagram, Twitter, I think Facebook as well, just Uncommitted NJ. You can look us up, you can find us, message us there. We'll be pretty responsive. So if anyone has any questions, if they want to get involved, you know, or anything else, you could pretty much find everything somehow linked from either our socials or our website.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having us. Thanks for having us. And thank you all for participating in the discussion.
Thank you so much. Well, thank you for This Is Revolution. Look forward to seeing you guys on Tuesday with our host, Jason Miles. And we are
out.